the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
An astonishing story that made news this year is that US dollar-backed stablecoin Tether made more money than Goldman Sachs in the last quarter of 2023. Consider this. Tether has just 100 staff against 45,000 staff for Goldman Sachs and 310,000 staff for JP Morgan Chase. A company written off as a curiosity when it started in 2014 is now challenging the world's biggest banks in terms of profitability. How do we account for this? There are two US dollar-backed stablecoins that control 90% of the market, Tether and USDC, though Tether is by far the largest. The total market cap of the stablecoin market is $160 billion, and that's from nothing 10 years ago. Stablecoins are a way to park profits made on crypto coins into something more stable. That's why they're called stablecoins. But you don't have to convert them back into fiat. There's a lot happening in the stablecoin space, and to help us explain this, we're joined by John Avadia, no stranger to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, and John is the founder of crypto exchange OVEX. Hi, John. Thanks again for your time. That's quite a story, isn't it, about Tether's profit handsomely beating that of Goldman Sachs. Part of this is because it invested in U.S. Treasury bills as well as Bitcoin and gold, which, of course, did very well over the last year. For people not familiar with this, explain what a stablecoin is and why you would use them.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me, Kieran. Tether is absolutely a very, very interesting company. Quite remarkable. What they do is super simple business model. They issue a stablecoin, a US dollar-backed cryptocurrency, one-to-one to the dollar. Their stablecoin is called USDT. You transact with it just as you would with Bitcoin. The only difference is the price is stable, doesn't change, and can be redeemed one for one to the US dollar. So that's essentially what Tether do. Their growth is phenomenal. I mean, Tether adding roughly $1 billion pretty much a week at this point to market cap. Their market cap today is sitting at $120 billion. Really incredible. And for every one of those tethers that are issued, they have a dollar sitting in the bank. And what they do with that, most of their treasury, they put in US T-bills, which is paying about 5% a year. So on $120 billion, what is that? That's 5.2. It's about 5.2 billion. 5% of 120 billion is $6 billion. $6 billion a year, and that's pure interest. So you can imagine how profitable this company must be. It's not a heavy overhead operationally. They're actually one of the largest U.S. Treasury holders in the world. I believe they hold more U.S. T-bills than Germany. So they really are just a remarkable company. And many, many companies now are starting to realize the significance of stablecoins. We've seen PayPal look to launch a stablecoin. There's a large American company, USDC, been trying to launch a stablecoin. They've got about $35 billion in circulation. But Tether's really where the liquidity is in the crypto market as far as stablecoins are concerned. And generally, all crypto liquidity, most of it happens on Tether markets, be it Bitcoin, Tether, Ethereum, Tether, and all other markets. Back in the day, every crypto was paired pretty much with Bitcoin. That's why you see a big price move in Bitcoin. You'd see a big price move in all cryptocurrencies. Today, it's really more Tether markets. Most cryptocurrencies, their default market would be Tether, and then the Bitcoin would become their secondary market. So it's been a very interesting progression in the crypto market.
There are different types of stable coins, some of them backed by fiat, some of them by cryptocurrencies, some of them by a mix of different types of assets, which I guess you would call a hybrid form of stable coin. Just quickly run through what these are and what are the advantages and disadvantages of each.
Yeah, sure. So the predominant stable coin model is what Tether use, and that's a collateralized model. So that's where they will hold one-to-one $1 for one coin issued in a bank account or in some type of US dollar asset, such as a treasury bill. So that's the default model. That's pretty much the best model. That's the safest model, and that's where it's very difficult to go wrong. Because as long as they're holding the dollars, they're able to redeem one for one, and you're able to essentially get your liquidity. If you hold the Tether stablecoin, you're able to exit one for one for the dollar. There's other stablecoin models, such as algorithmic stablecoins. There's the famous and not so good stablecoin, which was UST, the stablecoin that was connected to Luna. And how that worked is that was backed by a coin called Luna. So it would create a coin called Luna, lock it up, let's say 150% collateral, and issue a stable coin and say, okay, it's worth one to one. When the value of the Luna would drop below a certain price, they would liquidate the Luna for dollars and then basically buy back the stable coin. That model collapsed when the price of Luna dropped very, very rapidly. And instantly, there was about $40 billion of UST, which was the Luna stablecoin that was lost, that went to zero. Those models are very, very risky. And what happened at that time, actually, is people were a bit confused. Obviously, there was a lot of panic in the market. There was a lot of stablecoin value lost in the form of UST. People got very confused, and they thought USDT was similar to UST. And started selling USDT, which is Tether. Tether depegged about 2%, and OVEX actually stepped in and defended the peg, buying up probably more than $1 billion of Tether over about a week's period and redeeming them for US dollars because Tether was fully operational, fully functional. Tether has all the assets backing the coin. So it was very simple for us. We simply went to the market, bought Tether at a discount, took it to Tether, redeemed it at 1-to-1, and continued doing that for a few days while the peg while the depeg remained, and that was a very profitable trade and something you can only really do if you have an account with Tether. We had an account with the same bank at Tether. We were kind of perfectly positioned to take advantage of that trade, and people in the market were all very confused. They didn't understand the difference between something like UST, which isn't a collateralized stablecoin. There's no dollars in a bank account somewhere backing it, and USDT, which is Tether, which is solid as a rock, been around forever, pretty much since the crypto economy started, and has real dollars in a bank account ready to redeem if that's what the market demands.
So you had an opportunity there when there were a deep peg momentarily. You had an opportunity to basically arbitrage. You were buying Tether at a discount and redeeming it at face value.
Exactly. It was a fantastic trade. Only lasted about a week. Tether quickly regained the peg.
Right. And this, of course, does happen from time to time, although it seems to happen less frequently now. And there's also been a lot of press in the last few years about Tether and whether it is adequately collateralized. And I think they have answered that question fairly substantially. They seem to be over-collateralized at the moment and probably intend to keep it that way. Plus they're also audited. Maybe just talk about that, you know, the security and the safety of these stable coins. Are you really buying a dollar when you think you're buying a dollar?
Yeah, sure. So Tether obviously is very, very old company, kind of started, let's see when Tether started exactly, but they've been around for ages.
2014.
Okay. So they've been around for ages. So they went through some teething phases, over the years. They found it very difficult to get banking, as many crypto companies do. And they found it very difficult to get a top-tier auditor, as many crypto companies do over the years. The result of that was a lot of FUD, essentially, a lot of rumors, a lot of people saying, oh, Tether's not back, they don't have the dollars, because Tether simply didn't have a top-tier firm auditing them and attesting to their balance sheet. Since then, over the last few years, Tether's come a long way in that regard. They now have audits. They have attestations, I believe, they publish on their website. They're incredibly profitable, so it would be mind-blowing if they didn't have the assets. They have, I believe, as far as the attestation goes, it says they have well over like $6 or $7 billion of additional collateral. Which makes perfect sense. I mean, they're throwing that off every year in profit. It's just insane. And then on top of that, I believe they have something like a $60 billion investment portfolio in addition to the $120 billion of client assets plus $5 billion of extra collateral. Plus, I believe it's about a $60 billion portfolio of investments. So Tether's balance sheet is very, very strong, and it's come an incredibly long way since 2014 when they started. And it's very important to make that assessment when buying a stablecoin.
Yes. Okay. So let's just talk about the difference between Tether, USDT, and USDC. Tether being the bigger, I think it's got about maybe 80% of the stablecoin market, or even more. But USDC has been trumpeting the fact that it is very secure, very well audited, and I know you deal with USDC too. Why is it that Tether has blown the lights out and become the biggest?
So Tether has been around quite a lot longer than USDC. So that's quite a big reason. I guess there's somewhat of a network effect when it comes to liquidity. So a lot of liquidity built up around Tether. All the exchanges listed it, all the market makers traded on it, all the users were trading on it. So that was quite a big reason for Tether's kind of success. Tether was already at many, many billions before USDC even launched. And USDC had a very kind of slow start as well. They had a whole conglomerate between Circle, the company, Coinbase, and there was a whole bunch of different partners. When they started, that structure seems to have largely kind of changed. I believe Coinbase is definitely still involved, but it's not the same consortium it used to be. Circle or USDC. USDC is pretty much owned and operated by Circle. USDC also has a slightly different model where they don't charge an issue and redemption fee. They had a very big kind of third party payments solution that they were offering, where people could essentially buy USDC and send dollars to a third party, which was obviously a really impressive feature, really nice function. And likewise, third parties could send you dollars. I could go create a USDC account, send my details to you, Kieran, and you could send me dollars to that bank, to that account, and I would receive USDC, which is a really nice feature, but a very big compliance burden and highly, highly risky. That also proved to be a large stumbling block for Circle and USDC, where they ended up obviously stopping that. Their main banking partner who was allowing that was Silvergate, who went insolvent. USDC was also holding, I think it was roughly 5 to 10% of their balance with Silicon Valley Bank, who went bust. That actually led to a weekend where USDC depegged. That traded at a few percent under market. We weren't able to arb that one, unfortunately, because USDC weren't actually processing withdrawals over that weekend. So you could buy as much USDC as you wanted, but you couldn't get the dollars out. One, banking crisis, their main banking partner was down. And two, it was a weekend, and they didn't have any sort of internal banking network to allow settlements. So that's a part of it. After that weekend, after Silicon Valley Bank blew up and Signature and Silvergate Bank blew up, USDC kind of changed their model. Now they only really serve institutions as far as minting and redemption is concerned, kind of similar to Tether's model. So I believe USDC has gone through a lot of teething, kind of finding their feet, made some mistakes in terms of, compliance and regulatory processes. And now they found themselves in a very similar kind of model to what Tether do. And they are growing, and I believe stablecoins will be a multi-trillion-dollar segment. The utility that stablecoins offer is just immense. What it offers, and especially what it offers people in Africa, stablecoin, Tether, USDC, but more Tether, not really the other ones, because as far as an African, you kind of need to know your money's safe. But what it offers is it offers a US dollar bank account in your pocket in a matter of minutes. You simply download a wallet, Coinbase wallet or any sort of custodial wallet. Even you download MetaMask on your desktop, and all of a sudden you have a incredibly high fidelity US dollar bank account, one that you can receive and make US dollar payments in seconds for almost free, without any risk of chargebacks, without any risk of failure, without any risk of your money not getting to where it needs to be. And for Africans and for people in the emerging world, that's a true game changer. Opening up a US dollar bank account is close to impossible for the average, let's say, Nigerian. Even the average South African, it's very difficult to go open up a US dollar bank account. But the average Nigerian, the average person in Senegal, the average man in Zimbabwe, it is a virtual impossibility to open up a US dollar bank account. And what stablecoins offer is essentially that, in the easiest possible way. And to be honest, it's even better than a US dollar bank account because, again, it operates 24/7. It's instant, never fails, doesn't ask too many questions, no massive headache to create the account. And because of that, stablecoins will almost definitely be a multi-trillion dollar segment. And I think it's kind of just getting started. And Tether's definitely poised to be the leader in that.
That does raise questions. If you're involved in business, you're a small entrepreneur in Africa, let's just say in Nigeria, and you do have a custodial wallet where you store your US dollar, your stablecoins. What are the regulatory issues there? And when you want to off-ramp, is that does that then incur costs that ordinarily you wouldn't incur?
Yeah, sure. So it's actually kind of the opposite. So let's talk about the regulation for a second. So most countries regulate crypto stablecoins the same way as they regulate crypto. So South Africa, for example, we're very clear that they see stablecoins as crypto assets. So that means that the regulation required is that required in order to essentially on and off ramp cryptocurrencies. So South Africa, very smooth, very simple, incredibly clear regulatory framework around crypto assets. We operate, obviously, a very large OTC desk and market maker in South Africa and across Africa. Let's take South Africa quickly, for example, if you want to sell the crypto asset USDC. In fact, you will get a premium. So if you're selling it for RANDs, USDT, you'll get, say, 2% or 3% above the bank rate. So not only will you not incur costs, you'll actually make money by selling USDT, that stablecoin, for local currency in South Africa. Nigeria is another great example. Nigeria was a very big, and is a very big country for crypto volume. Nigeria probably does north of $100 million a day in crypto to local fiat transactions. So that's Nigeria Naira to crypto, crypto to Nigerian Naira. Most of that volume is in fact on Tether and not necessarily on Bitcoin. So again, a very big market. They went through a stage where the central bank kind of wanted to clamp down on crypto. They had big riots in Nigeria. I don't know if you remember, there was the SARS, it's their police force. There were huge riots about police brutality. And as far as I recall, speaking to my friends in Nigeria, they are a very abusive police force. So there were huge riots, and in fact, there was actually a massacre where the police actually killed many protesters in Nigeria. And as a result of that, the Nigerian government kind of clamped down on crypto because they blocked all the rioters' bank accounts who were funding these riots, and they weren't able to receive local currency, but they started funding it using crypto and Bitcoin. And the rioters were still able to continue their work rioting and protesting and somewhat of an uprising against this barbaric police brutality. When the Nigerian government saw that, they weren't very happy about their lack of control on the financial system. So they put out a directive telling banks they cannot ban crypto companies. That went on for about 2 or 3 years. But now the Nigerian government's definitely is coming around to it. Nigeria has a strong need for cryptocurrency. Most of the Nigerian FX happens outside of the banking system. And crypto is by far the most efficient way to do that. And the government doesn't have a problem with people using crypto for that purpose in Nigeria because that's how the economy works. It's how import and export gets done. And it's efficient, and it adds to the economy. So they're slowly starting to reverse that ban. They've reversed the ban pretty much. The Nigerian government have issued kind of a cryptocurrency license framework. So again, on a regulatory side, even Nigeria is coming around to crypto assets and creating a framework. They are running some pilots. We're working with their tax authority as running a pilot on crypto asset exchanges. So that's kind of a little sandboxed regulated environment for crypto asset businesses to run. So that's very interesting. So as far as regulation, most countries are coming around to it. And again, in Nigeria, if you sell USDT for local currency, you're getting a significant premium, I think close to 10% today. At a point in Nigeria, that premium was 70%. So if you sold USDT for local currency, you were getting 70% more than you would get if you sold dollars at your bank. So again, no cost, only significant gain when converting your crypto into local currency. And then in the converse, when you're converting local currency to crypto, then you do face a significant cost. So let's say in South Africa, local currency to USDT or to crypto, you're paying about 2-3%. And that's 2-3%, probably more than you'd pay at the bank. The bank has their own fees, but usually the bank's probably about 1% in a country like South Africa. So it's costing you probably 2% more. But again, it's instant, it's quick, it's in your pocket. You own that crypto, you're custodying that crypto. It's not some payment that's going to take 4 days, or you have to have some complicated bank account offshore. And that could fail, and it's going to ask a million questions. And. So you pay a little bit for that. It's about 2%, 2-3% in South Africa. Nigeria, again, at the moment, I believe it's about 6-10%. But in Nigeria, if you want to go try buy dollars at the bank, it's almost impossible. If you go to the bank, you say, I want to buy some dollars. They'll say, yeah, sure, get in line. You get in line, you wait probably a month. They say, sure, you can have 10% of the dollars you requested. I mean, you can't do business like that. So paying 10% for instant liquidity, guaranteed liquidity, is really not a big deal. Plus, when you buy at the bank again in Nigeria, there will still be fees. So you end up paying probably about 5% more than you would at the bank when sending money out or when buying crypto assets in Nigeria using local currency. So it's not the biggest cost, and the benefit is significant. And because of that, there's really significant demand. So far more people are looking to buy crypto assets, especially in Africa, than they are looking to sell.
Right. And of course, one of the unforeseen, maybe not so much unforeseen, but one of the benefits of these stable coins is the fact that you can protect yourself against these weak local African currencies. I think the Naira is down probably about 30% over the last 18 months or 24 months. The Zimbabwe Zig, which is the new currency they launched there, that was devalued 43% last week. And you look at the kwacha in Malawi, it's a similar story there. Even the rand, although the rand is strengthening now, we went through this period. So a lot of people are waking up to this idea that you can protect yourself against weak local currencies by going into something like a dollar stablecoin. And you don't have to ask permission from any bank.
Yeah, exactly. If you look at African fiat currencies against the dollar, pretty much every single chart is up and to the right. Just a slow decline if you look over the last 10 years. Every single one is almost a straight line up and to the right. If you look at like the Kenyan shilling, straight line. Pretty much every currency, including the rand. Although, like you say, we've had a bounce here in the rand. I think the rand will probably strengthen a little bit over the next 2 years with the government of national unity. It's a great story for South Africa and frankly, quite unexpected. MK didn't kind of pull into the race at the last minute, we wouldn't have this diverse government we have today. So at least the rand in South Africa has some optimism and some positivity. But the rest of Africa, as far as fiat currencies, it's really the most predictable trade you could make. If you can find a way to short these currencies, you'll never lose.
Just quickly for people trading in Africa who are doing imports and exports, do they rely on the person that they're trading with having a custodial wallet themselves, or do they have to off-ramp and on-ramp all the time? How is this working in practice?
Yeah, so it's a mix. Most of the time they'd want to off-ramp. So they'd buy, let's say, in Nigeria, And generally, the client would want an end-to-end solution. So let's say a Nigerian client needs to pay a supplier in, let's say, Germany. They'll want an end-to-end solution where they pay Naira and they get the euros paid out instantly. And then what will happen on the back end is they'll buy USDT for Naira, sell USDT for euros, and pay out the euros. So that's kind of a lot of the trade. But what we're seeing a lot, especially in Asia and China, is suppliers, manufacturers, and exporters in China and Asia willing to accept, and in fact, preferring to accept USDT over another form of settlement. And this is a very, very interesting move. And I believe a big reason for the growth in USDT. So a lot of the time, African companies can actually just buy USDT and settle their invoices in China directly. Other countries too, but we're seeing a lot of demand coming out of Asia and China for essentially USDT settlement, which is a very interesting move. And it makes sense. It makes perfect sense. It's just a matter of adoption and the manufacturers or the merchants selling the goods being, I guess, savvy enough to understand the benefits of such a currency.
John, final question. Tell us about some of the latest developments at OVEX. Last time we spoke, you were expanding internationally. You did touch on that in the beginning, but just give us an update.
So we've been very focused on international expansion. We've launched probably over 20 countries in the last 2 years. We've got licenses in the UK, France, Australia, UAE, South Africa recently, very exciting, Botswana. Where else? We're busy with some license applications across Africa, Nigeria, Kenya, Senegal, West Africa markets. So that's kind of a big focus for us is this push across Africa still. Most of our business is very much South Africa. We love the South Africa market. We provide a very, very good service as far as large crypto transactions go in South Africa. That business is still very strong, still growing. In South Africa, we've recently, or should soon, to be receiving, please God, an ODP license, which is an over-the-counter derivatives provider from the FSCA. We'll be looking to make FX swaps on that to help some of our clients manage their exposure across Africa. Eventually, down the line, it'll be nice to offer some crypto derivatives within South Africa under an ODP license that doesn't exist today and will be a very interesting product for the South African market. The rest of Africa, growing quickly. Many markets are growing 20, 30% month on month. They're not as big as South Africa. South Africa is obviously a very big market. Second would be Nigeria, where we're approaching with caution still, although it's a very, very good market, but we don't want to get on the wrong side of the regulator until the regulation is super clear. We won't go full-fledged into it, but it is clearing up. I mean, like I mentioned earlier, they proposed a license framework. They've got one out. Very clear, understandable. They're not issuing the license yet, but at least you kind of get the framework that they're working in. That's pretty much what we're busy with. We're looking to launch, this is a separate kind of entity, but with a lot of the same benefits, a lot of the same learnings from OVEX, and that's a cross-border payments company, treasury management payments and FX for Africa. And what that will be, we've acquired a company in the UK that does a similar business. And that essentially will allow cross-border payments across Africa instantly. So it's like kind of transfer-wise for Africa. You pay locally in Nigeria, as the example used earlier, you instantly get paid euros anywhere else in the world. Likewise for other countries, South Africa, to a degree, will be offering that. We have obviously the FX license in South Africa that we have. And we've been doing FX for a while. Right now, FX in South Africa has to go through an authorized dealer, which is a bit of a burden. It takes long. It's slow. It's a headache. That's the way we do it today. That's the way we'll do it for now. But it looks like the Reserve Bank's going to issue some regulation in South Africa that will actually allow cross-border payments to take place on crypto rails in South Africa. That will be very exciting. That will be a very exciting update and kind of progress from the Reserve Bank. They'll only allow it for individuals at first. And hopefully we're lobbying them. I think it's very important that they're allowed for corporates over the long run. But crypto will, without a doubt, be the cross-border settlement rail of the world. I mean, there's really no doubt about it. And stablecoins will be at the forefront of that. Again, Tether leading the charge.
Wow, what a fantastic summary of what's going on and an exciting future, you know, where crypto and stablecoins will no doubt end up dominating cross-border payments, and probably in the not-too-distant future. John Ovadia, CEO of crypto exchange OVEX, actually much more than a crypto exchange, OTC desk, Forex payments. Wonderful summary there. Thank you very much, John.
Thank you so much, Darren. Always a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.